The Trouts flew into Albuquerque late in the afternoon, and from there made their way to Los Alamos. In short order, they found themselves sitting down with Ed Frobisher, head of the Kovac Society. After they'd introduced themselves and made some preliminary conversation, Gamay got to the point of their visit. "We're with NUMA's Special Assignments Team." "What are a couple of people from the world's largest ocean studies organization doing in Los Alamos, far from the Atlantic and the Pacific?" "We think that the key that will unlock the mystery of some unusual ocean disturbances can be found here in New Mexico." He furrowed his brow. "What sort of disturbances?"
"Whirlpools and giant waves big enough to sink ships."
"Please excuse me, but I still don't know what you're talking about."
"One of the NUMA scientists we talked to suggested that the disturbances could have been caused by disruptions in the Earth's electromagnetic flow. He brought up the Kovac theorems."
"Go on," Frobisher said. Taking turns, they told him about the ocean disturbances and the speculation that they were man-made. "Dear God," Frobisher said, his voice hoarse. "It's happening."
"What's happening?" Trout said.
"NUMA or not, you've blundered into something much larger than anything you could imagine."
"We do a lot of that," Trout said. "It's part of the NUMA job description."
Frobisher stared at Trout and Gamay. "Let me start with a little history. Most everyone knows about the letter Einstein wrote President Roosevelt."
Trout nodded.
"Einstein said that with a controlled chain reaction, a reality, an atomic bomb was possible. He suggested that the United States develop such a weapon before the Germans did."
"That's right," Frobisher said. "The president appointed a committee to look into it, and the result was the work here at Los Alamos. Few people know that near the end of the war, Einstein wrote a second letter that has never been published. In it, he warned of the dangers of electromagnetic war based on the theorems. But unlike Kovacs, who was considered by some to be a bit of a quack, Einstein's opinion had weight. Truman was president by then. He appointed a committee to look into Einstein's suggestion, and out of that came a research effort similar to the Manhattan Project."
"We've heard that the Russians were pursuing the same line of research," Gamay said.
"That's right. By the mid-60s, we were neck and neck with the Russians."
"How far did the research go?"
"Far. They concentrated on the land rather than the sky and created some earthquakes. After the big Alaskan quake, this country retaliated. We caused some nifty floods and droughts in Russia. That was all small potatoes."
"Floods and quakes hardly seem minor occurrences," Gamay said.
"That was only the warm-up. Scientists from both countries discovered about the same time that the combined force from their experiments could cause major changes in the Earth's electromagnetic field. A top-secret meeting between the two countries was held on a remote island in the Bering Sea. Scientists and government officials attended. Both countries were presented with evidence showing the serious consequences of further experimentation using the Kovac theorems."
"How do you know all this if it was so secret?" Gamay said.
"Simple. I was one of the participants. We agreed to end research and get back to lesser evils, such as nuclear warfare."
"It's hard to believe there is something worse than a nuclear holocaust," Gamay said, raising an eyebrow.
"Believe it." Frobisher leaned forward in his chair and lowered his voice from habit, as if he thought that the room was bugged. "Keeping the secret was considered of such consequence that a security apparatus was set up in each country. Anyone who became too inquisitive or knowledgeable about Kovacs and his work was discouraged or, if necessary, eliminated."
"You talked about worldwide consequences from the electromagnetic manipulation," Trout said. Frobisher nodded.
"What scared everyone was the possibility that the electromagnetic manipulation would cause a shift of the Earth's poles."
"Is that possible?" Gamay said.
"Oh, yes. Let me explain. The Earth's electromagnetic field is created by the spinning of the outer crust around the solid part of the inner core. Scientists at Leipzig University developed a model that showed the Earth as a gigantic dynamo. The heavy metals and liquid magma
of the inner core electromagnet of the clutch. The lighter metals at the crust are the windings. The planet's poles are determined by the electromagnetic charge. The magnetic poles are the result of vortices deep in the molten core. The magnetic poles tend to wander. Navigators take this phenomenon into account all the time. If one pole declines in strength, you might see an actual reversal of the magnetic north and south poles.
What would be the effect of a magnetic pole shift? Gamay said.
Disruptive, but short of catastrophic. Power grids would be knocked out, satellites rendered useless, compasses confused. Atmospheric holes might be punched in the ozone, causing long-term health problems from solar radiation bursts. You'd see the aurora borealis farther south. Migrating birds and animals would be disoriented. But it would be nothing compared to the effects of a geological polar shift.